My name is Tyler.
My name's Oren.
And welcome to the Horror Podcast. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Great.
Who all saw Dead of Night for the first time?
Yay!
Oh damn! Yes, that's awesome.
All right, we're gonna get all involved in some puppet stuff here very soon.
All involved in some puppet stuff. I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. But those of you that are joining us for the first time tonight to the Horror Podcast. Essentially, the episode will be broken down into three acts, just like our favorite movies. The first act, we're going to talk to you about kind of what is getting us excited in the horror genre this month. Second, we will tackle our essential question, which ostensibly tries to take a look at maybe the more academic side of the movie. Rarely do we actually take a look at the academic side of the movie, but
we might a little bit this time. We'll see.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Yeah. And then finally, if you like this film, then we'll give you a couple of recommendations for a really great double feature using an activity we call Four Corners. So before we get there, Andrew, What is making us making you excited today?
So the recent stuff I've read or watched, I read this comic called Four Gathered on Christmas Eve, which is four different comic creators: Mike Mignola, Eric Powell, Becky Cloonan, and some other people. James Herron, I believe, is the fourth one. Doing like ghost stories for Christmas, basically, because we'll talk about it in a minute. But ghost stories for Christmas is a whole thing. And then also I recently watched Lord of Misrule, which is this folk horror thing by William Brent Bell, I believe, the guy who made The Boy and Orphan First Kill and that kind of stuff. It kind of dropped onto streaming without any real fanfare, but I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, so. That's a couple of interesting pieces of work to build off of. The Boy, the original, I think is quite good and really interesting. The sequel, maybe not so much. All of the bad things of the first and none of the good. But
I never saw the sequel. So.
Whatever. So I have two things I want to talk about. Number one is kind of more of the normie horror world. I'm getting into Murder at the End of the World, which is basically like a locked door detective series that takes place way in the, like, I think
like,
it's the...
Like Arctic Circle or
yeah,
something?
It's like the Finnish part of the Arctic Circle. It's got a tech mogul who is really bad and easy to hate. And the heroine here, as you can see, it was very much kind of like it's got a feel of like Girl with a Dragon Tattoo kind of vibe to it. But it is so much fun. And I don't know, like it's the type of thing that my whole family enjoys, is this kind of rebirth of the Agatha Christie mystery. But this is definitely that, and absolutely loved it.
So is it like a miniseries, or is it an ongoing series?
It's like a series. So they don't claim it as a miniseries. I will find it very weird if they make a season two. Although, like, essentially the main character is like one of those like Redditor true crime like people that then like actually solved a murder, wrote a book about it, and then like gets invited to this tech retreat for reasons that we don't know yet. Don't know yet. So I guess like she could be in a different location every time, a little bit like Hercule Poirot. So the other thing that I'm really excited about is Raging Grace, which is a brand new movie just released on streaming, I think, last Friday. And it is, I would classify it as just kind of modern immigrant horror. We follow the lives of both a live-in maid and her daughter as they move into this palatial estate. And we start to discover some very similar things. I would say kind of like The Portrait of Dorian Gray and some other spooky things that are happening. But it absolutely has an agenda. That agenda is awesome. And I found it so much fun in the Eternal Loop. So check out Raging Grace.
Know this part of the world at all?
No. I've never been here before.
You'd like some tea, wouldn't you? Do you take milk and sugar? Milk and sugar, Mr. Craig. Milk and sugar, Mr. Craig.
Still there. So it isn't a dream this time.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, it isn't a dream this time. I must be going out of my mind. You see, everybody in this room is part of my dream. Everybody.
Good Lord, really?
Very extraordinary.
You're kidding.
What, all of us?
I can only tell you that when I came into this room, I recognized you all instantly.
Having seen all our photographs in the newspapers, I take it, Dr. Van Swarten.
Of course, you may have seen me on the sports page. Motor racing's my life.
That was my chance. I can't make it. I can't make it.
Just room for one inside, sir.
Sort of teamed up with him, aren't you?
Him? My good man, think nothing of it. I'm just about through with that cheap ham, anyway.
Oh. Temper.
You'll be sorry for this later, you know.
Yes, I suppose I will.
Let's play another game.
Yes, hide and seek.
Who's to hide?
I'll hide.
Yes, it's a great hide.
All right, so our essential question today is, what can Dead of Night teach us about steady state theory? This is Oren's pick from the beginning, Oren's question from the beginning. So, yeah.
So we will get into this a little bit more, but there is... So steady state theory is a theory in physics, specifically in like cosmology, about the creation of the universe. So like it is essentially an alternate theory to the Big Bang. And it has a very unlikely but really significant connection to the movie we just watched. So we're going to talk about all that in a bit.
Okay.
And that'll be our essential question. We will actually maybe kind of answer it this time around,
which
is shocking.
It'll
and
be a
unprecedented
Christmas miracle, everybody. So, but before we get there, Andrew, next slide, and our first giveaway.
Yes, we're going to do our first giveaway, and in honor of the fact that we're doing ghost stories for Christmas, we have many, many, many ghost stories. I have like 4 books of ghost stories.
Amazing.
Here for you, except one of them's not. One of them is 101 ghost jokes, so that'll be really fucking terrible.
This movie is funny enough. I think the jokes play along with it.
And then also a ghost.
Who doesn't love ghosts?
So yeah. We'll see who wins this.
All right.
You should have gotten a little card or a ticket when you came in. And the last 3 numbers on it are
035.
035? Do we have a 035?
I'm trying to find my ticket.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God, I had it.
If you
the ghosts
lost it,
have taken
I
it.
Let it go.
If we had a mirror, it would pop up in the mirror.
Right, it'd be in the mirror. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. What? I tell you what, I'm sure we could come up with something. If you have the winning ticket afterwards, we'll come up with something.
You'll get another drawing. We'll keep this around. All right, we'll do another one. How about 033?
033. Hey, we'll keep going until we get a winner.
Wow.
All right. Usually it's first go. Oh,
did you get it?
Yay! Oh. All right.
Ghosts for you.
Yes. Welcome to the ghosts. Yeah.
If you turn it up, we will get you something. We promise.
Yeah. We'll take care of you. All right. So my general question always, especially in films that you pick, right? why this movie, why this time, like what's, and again, definitely enjoyed it. So what is the exceptional quality that brings it to everybody today?
So we're going to talk a little bit about Dead of Night in general, but so the reason I picked it right now specifically is because I was trying to do a Christmas movie, even though we're like a few days after Christmas, but I didn't want to do, for various reasons, any of the usual suspects of Christmas movies, so like Black Christmas or Krampus or whatever. And Dead of Night both has a segment that takes place on Christmas and is very much in keeping with the tradition of ghost stories told around Christmas. So that's why I picked it now. It's one that's been on my list for us to show for a long time because we've never really done an anthology film, and we've never... this is a particularly interesting anthology film for a number of reasons. It's, as we said before, it's basically the first English-language anthology horror film. It's you split hairs whether it's actually the first. Like, there's a movie called Flesh and Fantasy from a couple of years before that you could argue is, but it's not really very horror-y. There are like French and German anthology films that predate it, and there are silent anthology films that predate it, but very few. Whereas this one kicked off a whole like cottage industry of them, which we'll talk about in a bit. Like, all the Amicus anthologies were basically inspired by this. So on and so forth. It's also pretty much the origin of the creepy ventriloquist dummy. There was one movie.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah.
There was one movie before this called The Great Gabbo that has a similar plot to this segment's plot, but it's not as horror-y. It's more like a melodrama.
Well, and it's pretty remarkable how many of the modern tropes that this movie either leans really heavy into or creates, right? Yeah. Like the great wraparound story at the end.
Oh my God, the wraparound kind of is so good.
Has this menagerie moment, you know, and I've heard some folks talking in the crowd as we were getting set up. Like, it's probably the scariest 5 minutes of this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Are when we get this parade, this cavalcade of all of the kind of the best hits of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think are the best anthologies that I can think of do that same thing. You know, like they give us those the kind of throwback moments that we can get. So, yeah, it's high quality.
It's also one of the very few movies, like literally there are maybe five movies that have ever adapted an E.F. Benson story. And E.F. Benson is my favorite ghost story writer. He was more or less a contemporary of M.R. James, another one of those like Victorian, you know, guys who like wrote ghost stories in their spare time, basically because they were independently wealthy.
Sure.
Pretty much.
As one does.
One does. I mean, I would if I were independently wealthy. But yeah.
You kind of do on your own. And
I'm
not
independently wealthy at all. No. I'm not even dependently wealthy. But yeah, so he wrote the story that the bus conductor segment was adapted from. He also, like the wraparound segment, is also partly inspired by one of his stories.
That's great.
The last sort of bit of trivia about the movie that's not related to why I picked it, but the very weird golfing story that is either like everyone hates or loves, but it's very strange compared to the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
The two main characters in it are... the actors are basically playing characters that they had popularized in an Alfred Hitchcock movie called The Lady Vanishes. The names are different, but the personalities of the characters and their relationships exactly the same. And then they went on to play them in several other, like, they would play variations of those same characters in several other movies because they were these huge hits with audiences.
I mean, they give great chemistry. They are really funny.
Yeah.
There's a banter about it that I think feels organic and fun. Like, I just kind of want to hang out and have a glass of whiskey and watch them like give each other shit all day.
Yeah.
Like, that would be some, that would be the good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. Andrew, next slide, please.
So, yeah. So, like I said, this is our first time doing an anthology film, at least here. So, you know, going back to practically the first one seemed like it made sense. But, I just threw in a thing about, like, let's talk a little bit about anthology films and, like, the history of them. Like I said, they do technically predate this. Waxworks isn't even actually the first one, I don't think. I think there's one that's mostly lost that's even earlier yet. But there's a few silent, you know, anthologies. Waxworks, if no one's seen it, is a silent film from, like, 1925, 1984, maybe.
Not to be confused with the really campy, great... Right.
Or the 19 other movies also called Waxworks.
That's true.
But yeah, so it's a silent film. It's got the premise is that there's a guy in a wax museum, and he is... I think he falls asleep, and he dreams the stories of the various wax figures around him. So there's, like, a story about, like, a sultan. There's a story about Ivan the Terrible. And then there's the last one, which is the only one that's really very horror-y, is a story about Jack the Ripper.
Of course.
You got
to have one of those in the wax museum.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's not a wax museum if you don't have it.
But yeah, so early on we didn't really have a name for these kind of films. And so a lot of people called them portmanteau films, or portmanteau, I don't actually know how you say it, which comes from the name for, like, a type of suitcase that opens into two halves. It's also what we call words that are made by combining two other words, like brunch, which is breakfast and lunch. Early on they were called anthology films, portmanteau films, although mostly we call them anthology films now.
Yeah.
And since this movie, there's been shit tons. like I said, if you're unfamiliar, Amicus was an English film studio. They were contemporary with the Hammer films. So they made movies like in the late 60s into the 70s. And they were sort of famous for making anthology films. They made 9 or 10 of them. Asylum, From Beyond the Grave, Tales from the Crypt, et cetera, et cetera. And they, like, said, you know, basically they were aping this movie, like, when they did them.
Sure.
Like, this. In fact, From Beyond the Grave reuses one of the stories from this movie. It retells the mirror story.
Which is great, yeah. So I think the one thing that we have kind of talked around that isn't on this slide but bears a conversation is that, like, Halloween is not the true ghost story holiday, you know?
No.
Like, the real... holiday where people would gather around, would talk about the ghosts, not only of like their, you know, long history, but like that Christmas gives us this ability to reflect back on the year. And like, I don't know, the one big tradition my family did growing up is we would go see Christmas Carol, right? And I freaking loved it because I loved Marley's ghost and I loved all, you know, like, I'm the creepy kid. But it occurred to me as we were watching this film, particularly that second vignette, like, it works so perfectly within that confines of, like, your ghosts come back to haunt you on these days that we are surrounded by our families, right?
Yeah.
And, like, the long story short, I love my family, but let me tell you, all the ghosts come out at Christmas dinner, you know? So I think that is partially why that holiday tends to be a little melancholic for some of us, is these ghosts of our past come back.
Yeah, well, I mean, something I've harped on in the past, like, Halloween now we sort of treat as though it is sort of the culmination of, like, the spooky time of year, but it's not. It's the start of it.
Yeah.
Winter is when it's spooky. It always was. Like, the whole idea that Christmas is the most wonderful time of the year or whatever is us whistling past the graveyard. It's winter. We're more likely to die now.
Yeah.
Like, it's cold and we're trapped inside, and if anything goes wrong, we are fucked.
Yeah.
You know? Like, in summer, if the power goes out or whatever, you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, you're inconvenienced, but you'll live. But in winter, you know, back then especially, like, if anything went wrong, you were done.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ghost stories are just a reminder of that. Like, the nights are long, you're huddled around the fire, it's scary outside, you know, and you're all getting a little drunk and smoking 4 million cigarettes, apparently.
Yeah. And, I got lung cancer watching this, yeah. It totally, what you're talking about, like, first and foremost, you're hearing it first, Oren is declaring... Halloween, the start of spooky season, and Christmas, the end of spooky season.
I mean, not
season,
even the end, it keeps going.
Okay, all right.
Until spring, pretty much.
But I think all of that, your argument, your discussion that, you know, this is really the scary time of the year is only accentuated by the fact that, you know, I'm a public school teacher in my day job. Like, man, when I left for break... It sounded like an influenza clinic, you know, like,
oh,
every child was coughing and snotting, and I loved them, but I was ready for them to all get out so that whatever they had, I did not end up with. So.
And again, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about it, but the ghost story at Christmas, it dates back at least to Victorian times. And again, in Victorian times, when you got sick, you probably died.
Yeah, right.
And, like, you know, you had, like, a 40% chance of dying just...
Yeah, just by hanging out. Yeah, right. I got a runny nose. Oh, shit, we better...
you know, 30% chance that Junior's dead.
Yeah. So we see all of these great anthologies, Andrew, which leads me to my secondary question here, Oren. Do you have a favorite vignette of all of the anthologies? Is there a thing that you can remember that either stands out in your mind or you look back fondly or you just think is rad?
I mean, probably it would be the crate segment from Creepshow. That's probably my favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
The crate, the monster in the crate under the stairs in Creepshow. It's so good.
Yeah. Well, there are so many of those vignettes, you know, of just pouring through all of the VHS and some of the early ones especially, I think, are fantastic. But I don't know. The one that stands out probably... maybe it's cliche or whatever, is The Raft, which is just terrifying. And I can remember that movie came out when I was like 7 or 8, right? The long story short is there's this weird gelatinous blob that like essentially eats people in this lake, right? And it seeps up from the floorboards and it drags this person in between the floorboards
the
of
the
raft.
On the raft, yeah.
Yeah, and like it is gnarly and gross and freaked a little 7 or 8 year old Tyler completely out. I think that's why I don't like lakes to this day. Like I can't see the bottom. There's no way in hell I'm swimming out to a raft. So I've learned something from
you learned your lesson.
I hope so. Probably not, but
probably not. You're probably still gonna get killed by a blob.
I mean, honestly, there are worse ways to go. You know, like at least there's a story to that. All right, Andrew.
So, yeah, we were just talking a little bit about, you know, just the tradition of the Christmas ghost story. Something I did want to mention that we didn't before is that there's actually, like, a vestige left of this in the song It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas. There's a line about scary ghost stories in that.
Oh, yeah, there is. Yeah, very early on, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the few, like, songs that mention it. But it was a really common big deal. Like, it was not weird. It wasn't just weirdos like us who told ghost stories at Christmas. Every fucking buddy told ghost stories at Christmas back in the day. It's just, we don't do it as much anymore.
Yeah, man. The Unsels just get drunk and play charades and usually end up, like, yelling at each other.
I mean, honestly, charades is more archaic than most people do, so good for you guys.
Yeah, you know, we're trying. I would say it's probably more of the work of the spiked eggnog than anything else.
I think most of them just jumped straight from the drunk to the yelling. I think they skipped the charades.
Yeah, well, it's been simmering. You gotta have a catalyst of some kind. All right, next slide.
All right, so we'll finally get into steady state theory.
Ooh, man, when I saw this one pop up on the slideshow, I was like, wow, Oren's going to do some work for us today. All right, what is going on, and what does this movie have to do with it?
All right, so I did a really, I mean, I used my whole ass, but it probably still is a half-assed job, like trying to learn about steady state theory enough to actually do this fucking talk, because tell you what I am not is a physicist. So heads up, this is going to be the most, like, layperson's version of this.
Somebody's going to reach out on Twitter, and they're going to be like, hey, physics professor here, you screwed it all up. Yeah, we know that.
It occurred to me, like, 3 days ago that Tyler is a, you know, teacher and probably has, like, a physics teacher in his school, and I should have gotten a physics teacher to come down here and show up and explain this so I didn't have to, but instead you're stuck with me doing it. So I read, like, 5 articles about steady state theory, and now I'm an expert.
All right, so talk to us. What is it?
So in 1955, the Big Bang Theory was not as widely accepted as it is today. And at that time, another alternative theory was put forth, which was steady state theory. And essentially they are both ways to explain how the universe was created or what happened to cause the universe to exist the way it does. Big Bang, of course, suggests that there was a Big Bang, and that the universe has been expanding outward from it ever since. Steady state, on the other hand, suggests that the universe is ageless, it is essentially eternal, and it keeps expanding at the same rate forever.
Okay.
So, we'll go on to the next slide, and we'll kind of compare the two. So, yeah, the essentially the argument is that, you know, Big Bang says the universe began with this big explosion. It continues to expand forever, well, not forever, it continues to expand until the present day. Expansion slows over time. And the density of the stars in the universe will therefore spread out. As the universe expands, they get further and further apart. Galaxies get further and further apart, so on and so forth.
All right. Neither one of these theories mentions a haunted mirror.
No, nope. I'll get to that in a minute.
Or a ventriloquist dummy.
I'm gonna get to that. I swear.
Like I wanted to say on this slide, like steady state, a giant ventriloquist dummy created the universe, and I'm like, yes,
I swear I am. I swear I'm getting to the ventriloquist dummy that created the universe.
All right, here we go, Andrew. Here it is. Here's the reveal.
Next slide. All right.
Okay.
So in 1955, when steady state theory was coined, it was coined by a British astronomer named Fred Hoyle, along with a couple of other guys. They coined it after going to see this movie and explicitly said that this movie is what made them figure it out.
Oh, all right.
The fact that this movie ended the same way it began and therefore was a steady state, it didn't change, it expanded but stayed the same, led them to the conclusion that maybe the universe worked the same way.
Oh, wow. So this movie here is responsible for a now debunked theory of the universe.
Yes, but it was a major theory.
Like,
this is, as far as I know, the only horror movie that is directly responsible for a major theory in physics.
Can you imagine if these two guys saw Triangle now or something? They'd be like, whoa, man, the universe is awfully complex or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it has been debunked though, right?
Yeah. Kind of.
Next slide, Andrew.
So it's been revised many times over the years, but including by the guy who coined it several times, like up to at least the 70s, he was like revising it. But neither it nor Big Bang are completely proved. However, Big Bang is much more accepted at this point, in part because of some nonsense I do not fucking understand. For one, there's two main pieces that seem to support the Big Bang theory over steady state, as near as I can make out. One of them is that expansion does appear to be slowing, which it should be doing according to Big Bang theory and should not be doing according to steady state. The other has something to do with, like, cosmic microwave background radiation. I just had to turn around and read that off the slide. That apparently they picked up that suggests that the universe used to be hotter and is now cooler, which supports Big Bang and does not support steady state, which again suggests that it should stay the same.
All right.
So, yeah.
I find it crazy because, you know, the guys that created the Big Bang Theory said they went to see Poltergeist. And
in 1955, that's impressive.
I mean, I don't know, whatever. Hey, I don't make these things up. Actually, I do. But, you know, all right. So here, proof positive. Our horror movies can influence science, and that's kind of my thing at school is that I harp on all of our teachers, like, use genre stuff in the classroom more. We know kids like horror movies, they like reading horror stories. If you inject scary things into your lesson plans, they will listen. Yeah. At the end of the day, man, even a physics
it
teacher.
It clearly worked.
Right. Yeah.
At least once.
All right. Proof positive. The podcast mission does exist. All right. Yeah. Very good.
At least once.
So one of you is going to create a new theory of the universe, and you'll be like, two guys on the horror pod class created whatever. Oh, yeah. Great image.
Yeah, so that's like the creepiest image in the entire movie, basically. It's super good. All right, next giveaway. This giveaway is our ventriloquist dummy-themed one, or at least more so. We've got a couple of Goosebumps books.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the entire series of the new Creepshow TV show on Blu-ray,
Comes to us courtesy of Shudder and the wonderful folks at RLJE, who are the unofficial sponsors of the podcast.
And then you also get a ghost.
Yeah. Ghost for everyone tonight.
All right. And the last three numbers are 039.
Yeah. Oh, and he found his ticket. All right. All right. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Enjoy. play creepy ventriloquist dummies.
So, we didn't include it in any kind of slide, but I would be remiss as we kind of talk about our recommendations for things that are like this. John Padgett has a wonderful piece of fiction called The Secrets of Ventriloquism.
So the book is The Secrets of Ventriloquism. Okay. The story is like 20 simple steps to ventriloquism
But a fantastic group of short stories. Yeah. And that particular short story starts kind of in the normie zone, and then by the end,
it's
batshit crazy.
So if you've never heard the story, there's a version of it on Pseudopod that's super good. They put it in like it was being played on a record, so you can hear the record sound and everything. It's very good. But so the premise behind the story, it was kind of his first story, is that he literally found a guide to how to be a ventriloquist. And the first chunk of the story is he was a professional ventriloquist, incidentally. But he found a little guidebook that they gave to kids or whatever, right? The first chunk of the story is that guidebook transcribed. So, like, the first chunk is literally steps to how to do ventriloquism, and then it gets fucking weird.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, if you do the first chunk, you can actually do a little bit of, like, shitty ventriloquism yourself. I tried it, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you can bring
No.
Hey, does that mean I get to skip next month and you'll just,
No, it does not. I forgot how, and also I was never good at it.
I love it. All right, so if you like tonight's film, we have now entered the third act where Oren and I are going to give you some similar projects, some similar content that you may hopefully
we're going
to
give you homework. We're not.
No, not at all. But Oren, start us out.
So one of the ones I picked is Flesh and Fantasy, which I talked about a little bit earlier. It's from a couple years before this movie. It is most famous to the extent that it's famous at all. For one segment that takes place during Mardi Gras that has a mask shop in it that looks super Halloween-y, some really great imagery of like people dressed up as devils and gargoyles and things.
I love it.
Each segment in it is like nowadays we'd call it almost like magical realism or something, like we wouldn't even really call it horror, but back then it was, you know, the genres were a little more permeable back then.
Sure.
It was considered spooky, but they're not like horror on the same level as this. They're more like weird coincidences and things, like some of the stories, it's like the bus conductor story or something. But they're all kind of like that. So.
Nice. Very good. I picked The Twilight Zone, the movie. For a number of reasons, obviously.
You're a fan of helicopter murders.
right. Yes, amongst many other things. Too soon.
Is it? Is it,
no,
in fact,
it is
too
not.
Soon?
It is not. Jesus Christ, that is like 40. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm old.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously the kind of cursed film element to it, I think, is super interesting. But it's a great anthology, and especially in the first vignette, there's kind of the same kind of creepy, weird vibes just by making things slightly uncanny, you know, which is, I think, the last 10 minutes of this movie to a T, right? So really probably the last 10 minutes of this, if you like the last 10 minutes of this movie, you'll definitely like the first vignette of Twilight Zone.
I don't remember what order
I think
going.
It's
which one's the,
first the
one?
Kid in the cornfield,
okay,
right?
Okay, the kid in the cornfield one? Okay.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
So creepy. Go for it.
So I waffled a bit on my next one because I was originally picking like Amicus anthologies because I talked about them earlier, but then I remembered the movie Ghost Stories from 2017, which if you haven't seen it is, or if you have and just don't remember which one it is because there's a million fucking movies called Ghost Stories, another very British movie about ghost stories being told by a told to a skeptic, just like this movie is, although it does a different, very different ending for it, but
But yeah, kind of the wraparound story is kind of relatively similar, and it's got a, I say this with the fondness of my heart, kind of a stuffy aristocratic vibe to it that is maybe in this.
They're
film
they're
as well.
Both very British.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Very. So. So there were so many that I was waffling back and forth. I almost picked Oculus, which is a Mike Flanagan film about a really scary mirror. It's one of his first films, if not the first film.
Second? Second or third? Absentia was first.
It is really, really, really good. And if you pick up nothing from this, go out and watch Oculus, especially if you like Mike Flanagan's stuff, right? But I didn't pick that. I picked The Others because I liked the kind of stuffiness, the kind of buttoned-up quality about everything. And it also, not to ruin this movie that is 22 years old, but there's a big reveal that is pretty similar, I think, to the reveal in the second vignette in this one that uses kind of kids and, you know, maybe trauma and all that kind of stuff to help tell a story. But it's Nicole Kidman, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Absolutely super good.
She got like a Golden Globe nomination for that, I think.
And I'm also going to claim, it's been a long time since I've seen it, that there's at least one Christmas tree in The Others. So I'm going to say both of them are Christmas films, and nobody here has seen The Others recently enough to tell me I'm wrong.
Nobody watched the new Criterion release of The Others and tell Tyler that he's wrong.
It
just got released on Criterion like this month, I think.
Shout at me at Letterboxd or Twitter or whatever else. Yeah. All right. Andrew, next slide, please. Okay, so
as you may have guessed from the trailer we showed earlier, Tyler has cursed us to watch I Know What You Did Last Summer next month.
Yeah, it's gonna be so fun. like I am legitimately excited to talk to everyone about why this kind of rebirth of slashers in the '90s is really the birth of American Giallo. So. That is going to be next month.
You do that.
Yes. Oren seems very skeptical.
I am very skeptical.
That's okay. I'm ready. I'm ready to have some fun.
I mean, if nothing else, Alice, Sweet Alice, which is technically Canadian, objects to the idea that American Giallo did not exist before the '90s.
You already said it was Canadian. So, hey, winner, winner. Where can they find more of your stuff on the internet, Oren?
God help me. I am on all the fucking social medias. I am on... Blue
say
Sky
it.
And
say it. And say the one you're on.
Twitter, unfortunately, yes. Still, and Facebook, and all those places, Threads, Instagram, Letterboxd.
You got them all.
Everywhere, except for the ones that are like videos, like TikTok and shit. I'm not videogenic or something, so I'm not on those.
And he said Twitter, but what he really meant was.
It's not what I meant. That's not where I am. I'm still on Twitter.
Oh, man. I am very comfortable saying I am no longer on Twitter.
Man,
and it is
it's much
good
better.
For my mental health.
It's much better to not be there, honestly.
Yeah, but I think where Oren and I spent a lot of our... First and foremost, I spent most of my time at SignalHorizon.com, where we publish all kinds of stuff about horror and science fiction. We invite you to not only read, but if you got a pitch... feel free to send me an email at Tyler at SignalHorizon.com. But I think social media wise, where we feel the most comfortable, where I spend a lot of time, is Letterboxd, which I don't know, man, just feels a fraction less toxic than everywhere else on the internet.
Well, no one actually talks to me on Letterboxd.
I know. That's the misanthrope or the, you know. Like
I just watch a movie and then I say like one sentence about it and then I'm done.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Great.
And then we like to read other people's and then occasionally we'll be like, man, can you believe blah blah blah. I'm to this day there are a bunch of people that hated Talk to Me on Letterboxd and I was a little angry about it for a day. I got over it because
I mean, so our we had one show we did Nosferatu, which we did entirely because of a Letterboxd review I found of it that was basically just. Someone saying like "fuck Nosferatu in the throat."
Yeah. That was it. That was it. That was the review.
Yeah,
5 stars.
No, it was not.
Well, hey, we appreciate the crowd coming out for this 1940s Christmas classic.
Yeah,
and we entreat all of you to come back to watch Jennifer Love Hewitt. Throw her hands up in the sky and say, "Why, God? Yeah, what are you? Yeah, yeah. What are you waiting for? Right?
And
so,
listen to Tyler defend this claim he's making because it's gonna be good.
Put on your black gloves and get ready, baby, because it's time for Giallos. Thank you so much for coming. Class dismissed. Thank you so much.